Well, we're already recording.
Yeah, you have the radio voice. You should take a moment to do the intro.
So what's up, everybody? We are Frantic Endeavor. I'm Ethan.
I'm Sierra.
Plus Jack.
I'm Cheese.
And Lexi.
And Wesley, unfortunately, could not make it today, so we're going to be carrying on without him. So I don't know what we're really going to do. This is our first time doing this.
Okay, well, I have a couple questions on my Instagram that were asked, as well as my Facebook.
Yes.
I have a few on my Facebook as well.
Yeah. So we can just...
We can just hop right into the Q&A.
Yeah.
No one commented on mine. My friends are lame.
Aww.
What friends? What?
Nope. All right, well, I have the first one.
All right.
It's from Casey, actually, the one that we sent the signed CD to him.
Okay. Email.
Yeah. So the first question was, how did we all meet? So we can just start there.
Oh, boy.
That's gonna.
You guys can start that because I don't come until later.
Should we do this chronologically?
We'll have to do it
probably.
Chronologically.
All right. So it's going to have to be the two of us.
Yeah, you can start this off.
Have fun.
Actually, to answer this really quick, because on Wesley's behalf, because he's not here, I moved to Carver in 2001, and that's when I met Wesley. It was in second grade. And then probably what?
Me.
11
we
years?
We met at the mall. We met, Tom introduced us.
12 years ago?
I was in probably 10th grade, so what year did I graduate?
Might have been earlier.
I
got to
do math. I was not ready for this.
Well, anyway.
Yeah, either way, Chris and I met through a mutual friend. And from there...
2008.
Yeah, you guys, you were at that for a while, weren't you?
Yeah, I mean, Chris and I have been playing music together since I started playing music, really. Yeah, geez, 10 years. Wow, that's crazy.
I'm glad we just realized this right now.
Yeah. And then I guess next would be Ethan would be the next person that we met through another mutual friend.
Oh, wow.
That's true. Our mutual friend, Troy, and you may be listening. What's up, Troy?
He'll listen to it. Hi, Troy.
Hi, Troy.
What up, dog?
I think I knew him from a youth group, and then he heard me play drums, and he was like, hey, are you looking for a band? I'm like, maybe. And then he got me in touch with Chris, and then that just kind of took off from there. I think you visited the studio one time.
Yeah, he was like, yeah, so I totally know this drummer. He went to Berkeley and he lives in Carver and has his own studio. And I was like, yeah, right, Troy. Yeah, sure.
Lo and behold.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. And then I woke up from that dream. But then actually we came out into the middle of the woods and it was all real.
Yeah.
And he was real. I couldn't believe it.
So we brought him the bandstand.
Wes says we should use the sombrero to substitute him.
Oh, should we mic it up?
Mike up the sombrero.
Let's mic up the sombrero.
There it is.
So I guess, Wes.
Yep, Wes.
Well, Wes would have come before Ethan.
He would have come before me. He was on and off, right?
Sort of. I mean, me and Tommy were looking for a rehearsal space, and Wes and Hunter had a space at Bandstand, so we went over there. And that's where I met Wes. He was in Hunter's band. And they needed a guitarist and a singer. And we needed a drummer and like another guitarist and a bassist. Zach was there too. And so we just kind of combined into two different bands, Frantic Endeavor and Sleeping Statues.
Which was just the same members. Just
It was all the same members, but we would like just play different music.
Shortly before that, I had... I've been to Frantic Endeavor 3 times. shortly before that, I had left. I took like a year and a half, 2 years off. Played acoustic music with a friend of mine. And then I rejoined. So by then, they had already established themselves as another band. And moved forward. They were playing shows. I asked to come back. Wesley was happy. He didn't have to play bass anymore.
Oh, yeah. Wes was playing bass. That's right. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah. So I guess next in line would have been Sierra.
Sierra.
Who we met. She came to one of our shows.
And then she tried out to be our vocalist.
She auditioned to be a vocalist. And she was like, oh, I play violin.
By the way.
Do you have it with you? Sure. All right. Well, come play.
And then shreds the violin.
Shreds the violin. Yeah. Absolutely shreds.
Blows us all away. Exactly. Yeah.
They were like, yeah, we need you.
So we all discussed it. We were like, all right, so yeah, vocally would have been an option, but we need this more than anything. We need we need this violin. This is wild.
It was like that missing element we didn't know we were missing.
Yeah.
Right. Surprise.
So that's how we obtained a squib.
Yeah.
And then that, I guess that brings us to the keyboard chick.
The keyboard chick.
Yeah. I was known as the piano girl, right?
Or I wonder if that piano girl will be there.
Yeah. So it all started. I moved to Massachusetts from North Carolina 2 years ago, and I started going to Quincy College. And then below Quincy College, there's a pub, and every Tuesday there's an open mic. So I started doing that, and I would bring my keyboard, and I would sing a few cover songs. And one night, Chris happened to be there. And after
Most of us were there,
I think we were all there.
You were the only one that came up to me and talked to me, though. Yeah. I didn't know any of you were there. I didn't see any of you.
We went there with the intent of scouting people out, basically.
Pretty much to find you. We remembered you from the previous
time. We're going to make sure we get the keyboard chick.
Yeah.
And fun fact, like, you guys already know that, but those listening don't know that. That was the night that I almost decided to never go back to open mic again, because I was just getting sick of it. But something made me go, and
the universe said yes.
Good reason.
Could not have worked out better.
So Chris gave me the CD, and I listened to the demo tracks, and I remember texting him. I was like, the CD has potential.
Yeah.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, I remember that. So the songs are pretty cool. They have potential. I was like, okay. Well, she messaged me, so I mean, that as soon as she messaged me, I was like, okay, great. She's got something. She's not going to message us just to say no thanks.
Yeah, so after that, I listened to it in my car a lot. And then I set up the audition date, and I brought one of my songs. The lyrics I had already written like a year before, and I didn't have like a solid melody yet for it or anything with my keyboard that I consistently played for it. So I decided I had nothing to lose with these lyrics. So that's why I matched it to one of the songs. Did I match it to Fire Anthem at the time, like My Healing at the time?
It was the instrumental of Backup.
So that was me
and
versus
then
me.
It turned into me versus
originally.
Me.
Yeah. Okay, all right, got it. So that's how that came to be.
Back up.
Wow. Yeah.
I still get confused.
All of our songs have had so many different names over the years.
Each song has like 3 or 4 different names and about 100 versions.
Wait a second. Okay, so I completely forgot all the demo names now because I'm so used to the EP release ones.
So 2+2 was Brain.
Right, okay.
Back Up was Me Versus Me.
What You Want.
What You Want was Shallow. Wow.
Remember Hell Week, where it took us like a week to record one song demo?
That crappy
Ethan,
demo.
Ethan
put
puts
out.
In 200 plus hours.
Sounded like trash.
That sounds like
garbage. Like we recorded it on our cell phone. It's like we just got 6 cell phone recordings and put them together.
We might as well have a part. It probably worked better.
We've come so far. That is so amazing.
Hey, we owe it all to our producer, man. Showed us a lot of tricks.
Yeah, so how long have you been a part of the band, Lexi? A year and a half?
Around a year now.
I think a little
A year was...
A year was like September, August.
Okay, so...
Beginning of August.
A year and a few months.
Okay.
Cool.
So now here we are.
But the first show was October, right?
Mm.
Originally?
Was it the Halloween show?
No, it was the Kurt Travis show.
It was the Kurt Travis show, but right before the Halloween show.
So was Kurt Travis was the first show.
Yeah.
So
that was either August or September.
It was a great first show.
Yeah.
Good job.
Yay.
And one EP later and a bunch of shows, here we are.
Writing our second CD all together.
Yeah.
All new members.
Well, all new sound.
All final members, I guess.
Yeah, this will be
the those of you listening, I hope you're ready for whatever happens next because it's it is a wild adventure.
Yes.
We're taking.
Yes.
What the frantic endeavor.
Man, she said the thing. She said the thing. Game over.
There will only be 5 members on the next release.
In other news,
we're actually just
going to
put
violinist.
Chris on stage with a looper pedal.
Wes can play the little, what is Wes, that thing
slide
called?
Whistle. Slide whistle. He's really good at it.
Wes is surprisingly good at that slide whistle. I wish
he
was
here. Oh, okay. So next time when he's here, we'll have him do a song. Next time. Do a little ditty.
Absolutely. Which actually leads us to the next question that Casey asked, because we were talking about our sound, and he asked, what was your process in making the new EP?
The new one?
So,
the EP we just released?
Yeah, that's what he means. Okay. The one that we just released last year in May. So you guys can start that since you guys laid the foundation. That process started
with a different
singer. A long time ago in a galaxy far away.
No violin.
No violin.
Yeah, that EP started as three guitars, no violin, and a different vocalist. And then, you know, various personal differences. We won't get into that. Members came
many times,
quite a few times, and
we've slowly refined our core down to what it is.
Yeah,
there was almost a time. Stew. There was also almost a time throughout all this that a male vocalist was thought about.
Yeah,
for this. Oh yeah,
it's cool. it was almost kind of like one of those. Like singing contest shows you see, like here's the first round with 12 contestants. All right, let's bring these four back. All right, here's the final two. And then,
the auditions were really fun because we had a good variety of people of all different skill levels come in, all with their own unique ideas.
Really unique.
I mean, it was.
Ideas. I feel like this whole project has just been a refining thing because we've done the audition thing a few times, and each time we were like, okay, what do we keep? What do we change? Yeah. What do we never do again?
I think we streamlined
it too. I can imagine how fun that would be to see everybody come in with different ideas and different voices. Cool.
We've heard, I mean, not to take away from you guys, but especially Chris and I, we've heard many different versions of some of these tracks.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It's cool. You never really know what you're going to get.
What is it called now on the...
Lavender Love.
Lavender Love?
Yeah.
Lavender Love, Chris and I have heard probably, I don't know,
six different
eight,
ways.
Yeah, eight that versions. Was actually six, eight versions.
People are gonna be listening to this and be like, they don't even know their own song names. We keep asking each other, we're like, what is that called again?
Well, I mean, especially for Chris and I, it's just that one song. We've heard eight different versions or whatever. It doesn't matter.
Because that was actually a song that I had started writing, I don't know, years ago, and we ended up using it for our old band. I mean, me and Cheese were in a band before this.
We've been in two bands before this.
Yeah, I mean, I don't really count the first one. We never played any shows.
Yeah, but at the same time, it's like, it's where we started.
It is where we started.
You and we probably never would have been playing together if we didn't have that little garage, man. So
that little outlet.
That was cool.
That was really nice.
So back to the EP, which is we kind of got sidetracked.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
So it was recorded. It was done. It was ready to be produced. And then, you know, a whole bunch of stuff happened, and it was put on hold for a good 8 or 9 months, maybe more.
Is that before we found Sierra, and then we went in to do the violins?
Yep, and then we went back in for...
So then we had instrumentals with violin now.
Yep, but still no vocals. And then it was another 6 or 8 months after that we were finally ready, you know, with Lexi. We had everything written, ready to go in and record, and then we went in, patched everything up that needed to be patched up, recorded the vocals, and it finally got produced a year and a half after it was started.
Do we do 2 days for the vocals?
Yes, there were 2 days.
Yeah, 2 days. And we flew through those because I was so determined to get those done. I was like, no, they're getting done.
Recording was such a cool process.
It was.
It's a really interesting process because when you get those first rough mixes back, you feel so good. Like you already are so excited for how good it's going to sound because... You know, even the rough recordings are better than anything that you've produced yourself up to that point.
I still remember the exact night, the exact time that I received those, that everybody got them in the band, we got them in the email. And I remember all of you being so excited. And I was at work. I was trapped there till 12.
That's right.
And I couldn't listen to it. Right. So all of you were listening to it before me and I had to wait.
We were all talking about it. We were like, yeah, oh my God, this part's great. And you're just sitting there like, oh.
Tapping on the desk, looking at the clock.
Exactly. It was torture. Oh, but once I actually finally did listen to it, I smiled. I liked it. It was cool. And that was like my first official studio recording. Like when I was 12, I did some studio recording, but it wasn't anything like this because it was to somebody else's song and I only had like a small part and, you know, which also leads us to the lyrics and how that became part of the songs. It's basically really simple. I already had all the lyrics already written. So I just took a bunch of my old songs and I mashed them all together. And then I would send rough takes to the band and we would just refine it over time. There were so many different versions.
Yeah. We argued about them for a while.
Hours and hours we'd go back and forth. Like, I like this part better. And then someone else would be like, no, I like this part better.
He's like, no, I like that part. I want this part
out. That's the best part of the whole song. I hate that part.
What are you talking about? So a lot of back and forth, a lot of that. And then there were a few parts where I wrote new lyrics to match the song lengths. Because it's so fucking long.
We do tend to write somewhat lengthy pieces. Not all of them anymore, better. Though. We've gotten
We've definitely gotten better.
We finally have a 4-minute song.
There's a sub 3-minute song.
Yeah, we have a sub 3-minute song. We have a
barely,
song.
Barely 256?
258.
258.
Oh,
barely.
We have a song. We
still sub 3.
That's almost exactly 4 minutes, which the lyrics are still being written for that one.
I mean, there is another long one. What vault is what?
Make no mistake. There's going to be more long songs to come. Probably I bet we haven't even written our longest yet. But
I mean, that's the thing, though. When it comes to a song like that, sorry to interrupt. I'm not going to write as many lyrics for like really long songs. Oh, like that. I'm going to leave a lot of room for instrumental parts, that's like violin, guitar, solo. That leads us to the next question. I'm just going to keep this rolling. He asked, what inspires us?
Oh boy.
It's all about the money for me, honestly.
Well, okay.
Rolling in it.
I'm going to slowly commercialize the band until we're on the radio, top 40, and then I'm going to kick everyone out.
You have all the access to the bank, too.
That's true.
You can totally just ditch us once we get money.
Thanks, guys.
Just remember,
I'm just here for the comments.
That's all
I'm
here for.
I'm just here for the comments.
The comments? Got some popcorn.
Mm-hmm. I'm just here for the memes.
Well, I can take this time to say that on our Facebook page, if you click on the About tab, there's this little spot you can put band influences.
Mm.
But there was no way to really whittle that down to any specific, you know, few influences. So every person has a little list of all the bands that have influenced that person's.
Yeah, I know one of mine, even writing the EP, was Flyleaf. I know that I listened to a lot of their songs, and even of Lacey's new album, I was listening to a lot of that leading up to finishing a couple of the EP songs. And I think some of that sound kind of incorporated itself sometimes.
I'd agree with that, yeah.
Especially one of our new tracks.
our new tracks, yeah. People, some of them may not even be recognizable as us. But it's
tough to say, like, who my influences are. Like, I grab from so many people, but I feel like some of my biggest inspirations come from, like, a smaller local level. You know what I mean? Not, like...
Well, yeah, you see other people who are doing the grind, you know, doing the same thing we are.
I mean, Chris was there for probably one of the most inspirational nights I've had as a bass player. And that was when we went up to the Middle East.
We went to the Middle East to see...
to the Middle East to see M8 the Lion. And Dan Smith comes out on stage. He's got his Rickenbacker.
This is before we saw them. So the whole time, we really liked that bass fill in Cats.
Yeah, Cats.
And so the whole time, we were like, oh, I wonder who the singer is, because they all had instruments. So we knew one of them had to be the singer. And once they started, we were tapping each other on the shoulder. We're like, it's the bass player. The bass player is the singer.
It was awesome. He comes out on stage. He has the Rickenbacker. Let me touch it. From that moment, I felt like I was gifted. I felt like I was ready to take on the battle.
Did you
bass.
Ever think they'd be opening for you at your EP show?
Yeah, I couldn't believe that.
That couldn't have fallen into a better sequence of events if I had been dreaming. Like, that was
right.
It was unreal.
It worked out great.
Unreal.
Yeah, we had Professor Caffeine, which is Dan Smith's new band. If you haven't listened to them, you're really missing out. They just put a brand new CD out and it's really awesome.
It's true. Check them out.
But sure.
Every one of their tracks made it to my top 5 on Spotify for 2017.
Oh, yeah.
They took over my Spotify completely.
But we had them. They were going to open. We asked them to open for the EP release show. But it turns out one of the members double booked or he couldn't make it for some reason. And basically, Dan cobbled Emma Ate the Lion back together for that one time show for our CD release show. So that was really awesome. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was going to be Professor Caffeine first.
Yeah, that was almost not a thing.
I got that notification that Emma Ate the Lion was playing our release show. And I don't know. I almost just fell into pieces.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it's I don't keep it a secret that Songs 2 Count 2 is one of my favorite CDs of all time. Not even just on the local level, but like
all time,
all time.
Yep.
So yeah, I was really, really excited about that.
Oh yeah. But I definitely do agree that watching other performers that are still getting their name out there like us has inspired me. Like one time I went to Dusk, it was without, I don't think any of you were there. I went with Sam and Sinkin was playing. And their stage performance is amazing. Like, they're solid. Mm. And watching them that night, like, inspired me to incorporate certain things into, like, my stage presence. And I tried it at our next show, and it was great. It worked great. I was like, okay, cool.
It's good.
Yeah, we steal a lot from other local artists. But, I mean, that's kind of what you do. It's like a big community. Like, the bands are all, you know, ideally, I mean, there's, you know, there's naturally drama. But the bands are, like, all friends, and it's like a cool club. And you trade ideas and like secrets.
Yeah.
And then you all kind of apply it together.
Yeah, it's a really cool environment.
Yeah. A lot of people helping each other. It's a really supportive music scene. So I'm really happy of the state that it's in right now.
But when it comes to something in particular that inspires me, like whether it be me writing down to write lyrics or finding a melody, the answer to that is nothing, because it just comes randomly with no reason whatsoever.
Yeah.
I could be laying in bed one night trying to sleep, and then all of a sudden it's 2:30 a.m. and I sit up and I'm like, ooh, ideas.
All righty, just had some technical issues there. We're back at it.
So like I was saying, sometimes the writing process for me isn't the healthiest of ways. I like to stay up for 3 days at a time to write some of my parts, you know, play video games on the first day, read a book, and then try and write on the third day. And sometimes it doesn't happen. Sometimes it falls into place, but, you know, Chris can be pretty technical and tough to follow, but he gets it done.
I mean, Wes probably writes about half of it, too. Actually, how we wrote Shallow was we went to Bandstand one night, and we locked ourselves in a Bandstand room. And our whole thing was, okay, we're writing a song tonight, and we're not leaving this room until we write a song. And so we threw riffs and chords back and forth at each other until probably around 3 a.m., I want to say. I did the arpeggio during the verse, and he looked over at me. He said, that, whatever that is, we gotta work with that. And I said, okay, great. And then, I found the second arpeggio, and that was kind of the basis for the whole song. And then went back and used similar chords to make the intro, and then we just kind of pieced it together. And by 4 a.m., we had a basic song structure, and we had a cell phone, so we recorded it.
I remember seeing that video for the first time.
Yeah, it's on my Facebook somewhere. 4 a.m. song, whatever it is. But, I mean, that's completely different than to how, say, 2 plus 2 was written.
All right, so we just had some technical issues again.
It's because it's starting to get late. It's not even late. Like 8:30.
8:30?
No, it's not late, old man.
Starting.
Yeah, my computer hard drive just filled up, so we had to take a quick break. But anyway, I was talking about
2 plus 2
was written. I think Wes got to practice early, and he was just noodling around on his guitar, and then he played. Somehow he just came up with that opening riff to 2 plus 2, and I was like, play that again.
That's how it always is.
It's always somebody doing something and somebody going, that.
Yes.
Do that.
That's how it starts. And I came up with a drum thing for it. And then I think one of you two, either Chris or Cheese, came in later and we came up with.
I think we went to Cumbie's. Honestly, I think we left you and Wes. And I feel like we went to Cumbie's for some reason. When we came back, they had already worked out, I think, the intro and like the verse.
Yeah.
And they were like, hey, check this thing out. We're jamming. We listened to it. We were like, all right, yep. Down.
And it roll just evolved it from there.
That's
and that was actually one of the ones vocally, too. You kind of had basically that general song kind of more or less done.
Yeah, there were a lot of songs that I even kept my original melody that I played on my keyboard because somehow you guys had the same chords, the same chord progression, and it was just the same, and I could just do the same thing, and it was great.
The universe lined everything up nicely, put a little bow on it.
Yep. Yeah, 2+2 was like, okay, here's the lyrics, and we were like, cool, next. It worked out perfectly.
No, Lexi did really well. Just kind of under a deadline.
Yeah.
Like, hey, welcome to the band, but make sure you write all these songs like tomorrow. Not really tomorrow,
like,
but
like a year and a half of waiting will do that. We were
we wanted it.
Yeah,
we wanted to give her time, but at the same time, we're like, all right, come on, like let's go.
But looking back, it was a pretty quick process.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Extremely quick.
Yeah.
Especially how we had so many different ways to do it, and we narrowed it down.
Yeah, that was a
what a time.
That was a time period I'll never forget.
All that just makes me more and more, talking about this makes me more and more excited for the next one. I can
all. Yeah, because it's like, it's bringing back all the times we stayed here till like 3 a.m., the times where we had sleepovers here.
Yeah. We did ad libs.
Yeah.
That was, wasn't that the night after a show?
It was.
That was the night, we,
you, me, Lexi, and Wes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I still have the video.
I have a 2-hour recording from that night.
They did the stupid Mad Lib. I wasn't there, but this is
they weren't even the funny.
They had it all recorded. Someone recorded it, and we all listened to
like,
it.
Hey, listen to this.
Even
it's hilarious.
Like, yeah, even they were like, yeah, this isn't funny anymore.
We were so tired. We played a show. We all hung out at the studio, and come like 4 o'clock in the morning, we're doing Mad Libs for no reason. We're going around the room, and it's like, all right, give us a noun, and it's just like, all right, tree. Like, that was funny. That was the funniest thing. It didn't matter.
What is the thing that Wesley kept doing, though?
He could not, for the life of him, understand
what an adjective.
Adverb. So every time it got back to Wesley, somehow, everyone, he had adverb. He's like, what's that do? We were like, oh, my God, it's so late. We didn't go to bed till like 6:30 in the morning.
Yeah.
We played a show the night before that. It was wild.
So then I eventually got to the point where I was like, it's an action with an L-Y. Just think of an action with an L-Y at the end.
Yeah.
What show was that? That was
the show we inducted.
Was that the Kurt Travis show?
Halloween?
Was it not? Yeah, it had to have been one of those early shows, huh?
Those were our first two.
It was the show we invited you into the band permanently afterwards.
So the Halloween show.
Halloween show.
That was a Halloween show, okay.
Yeah, because it was like, what, 2 shows in 2 weeks or something?
It was 2 shows in a week.
Why are we so good at that?
Because we love doing that to ourselves.
You guys think that's bad? Try having another band. Try having another cover band that books multiple venues in the same weekend.
Yeah, I mean, we'll be doing that soon.
Yep.
Talking about songwriting, somebody asked me a question on the Facebook about how do we write songs. It might have been your mom, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah. And
my mom. You better listen this far in. You requested this.
You, Wesley, and myself kind of did a similar thing that you guys did for Shallow. For one of the new tracks, maybe, the three of us sat here and we were like, all right, somebody find a chord they like. And then that was it. We stuck with that chord and we moved on. It might have been Stealth Shuffle, honestly. Stealth Shuffle might have started as somebody find a chord they like.
Storm.
It wasn't Storm because I know for a fact I wasn't.
First of all, I think Wesley stole one of my music things. Okay, so one night you guys left to go to Cumbie's, and me and Wes for a while were staying back, and I would play keyboard and he would play his guitar, and we would just kind of like jam while you guys left. And one night I shared my song with him, Storm. And it has the same exact sound that he later that week came with on guitar.
Okay.
And all of you guys were like, wow, that's awesome. And he was like, yeah, I just kind of came up with it. I'm like, what song?
Wait a second.
But I wasn't mad because I was like, well, perfect. Now I can use that song.
Well, yeah. You slipped into his head because he definitely forgot that he
heard
it.
Oh, yeah, he definitely did because he's not that kind of person. It was just funny.
Yeah.
Because I remember thinking that. I was like,
I think it's the same chord progression as my healing, actually.
Really?
He uses a capo for that song.
Yeah, but I think the progression itself is... I think he's using different chords, but they're the same.
That would be interesting because I did the chord progression for my healing, but he did the chord progression for...
Storm.
Thank you.
We're all slipping into each other's subconscious.
I mean, that's what happens when you're around the same six people for so long.
Wow, you know what? That makes... there's another example of that that isn't out there anywhere, but Chris and I both wrote...
Oh, yeah. We both had a little track.
That we wrote for another reason. And I saw him playing it one day at the studio. I picked up a guitar, and I knew exactly what to play because I had a similar guitar.
Very, very similar. It was the same chords. It both had tapping in it.
Oh, wow.
It was eerie.
But it was really, really freaky because Chris
and
wrote
it together.
We played it together, and they worked.
They sounded like they were written for each other. It was amazing.
Huh.
That's cool.
I forgot about that.
It is cool. We should
150%.
Do you remember the part? I know mine. If you can remember it,
I might be able to.
We could try to use it.
Maybe one day.
You guys didn't record it?
No, I mean, I don't record things.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you do. You have a backlog on your phone.
Wait, yes,
but
I do.
You recorded the 2 hours we did the Mad Lib.
No, I record everything, actually. But I actually recorded my whole guitar part here at the studio. Ethan has my recording.
Oh, my.
I still have it in my Dropbox.
Okay.
Because my Dropbox... I have everybody's.
I have no idea where
he
that
went
file
from,
would be.
I don't record things to. Oh yeah, I have the file. It's right here.
So Squib, you've barely said two words. How do you go about?
That was another person.
Oh, yeah.
Here.
Yeah. How do you write?
Well, yeah. How do you go about your writing process? Because I imagine it's somewhat of a different experience than the rest of us.
Sort of. When I came into the band, the first EP, all those songs were already written out. So really all I had to do was just write my parts over what was already there.
Basically what I did.
Same thing, yeah. And that's pretty much just been my process since, even with the newer songs. Like, one of you guys will come up with something, like Chris or Wes or Cheese will come up with a riff, and then Ethan will hop in on drums, and I'll listen to it a couple times, and then I'll try to come up with something on violin. And that's really how that goes.
Pretty much plays... something close to the final version, generally the first or second time.
Yeah.
Like, it's
generally
kind of
flawless.
Amazing.
If Chris has this, you know, this lead riff, and he's like, oh, can you play this?
I'll play a harmony to this. She's like, okay, hold on.
she'll play it along with him, and then he'll be like, all right,
I think the first
play
time...
a harmony, and all she does is just like...
Yeah, her stick goes...
She just rotates her bow, and that's the harmony.
I think the first time we discovered that was when we were... kind of reworking My Healing, which was then called Fire Anthem, was, I think she at first copied your part, and then while she was playing it, you said, okay, can you do a harmony? And then a mid-time through, she switched instantly to doing a harmony.
Yeah.
I totally
and that's actually
about
the,
that.
I think you still play that the same way.
Yeah, yes, and then her rhythm changed a little bit, actually, to what the original lead part was, and then Chris learned her rhythm, so now Chris plays both the original rhythm and...
That's
rhythm.
True. When I the third time through the verse, I switched to the violin part.
Mm-hmm.
I love being able to do things like that.
Yeah.
I have a very pressing question for a dear friend of mine my Facebook here. it's going to be a real quick round. Everybody's just going to go around and express their feelings on this.
Lightning round.
So, to give you the background of this story, when I started working at my new job that I'm doing now, I work in a restaurant and we do egg roll specials. And I watched my boss in the first, 2 weeks do, 5 or 6 different kinds of egg rolls. So I stopped and I looked at him. I was like, dog, you cannot put everything in an egg roll. And he has proven to me that he definitely can.
I know where this is leading.
So question we have is, how difficult is it knowing that absolutely anything in the universe is capable of being rolled up in a wonton wrapper and deep fried? So, how does everyone feel about this?
Disgusted.
You could actually go ahead and challenge him, because I know he's going to listen. So if you have a random item that you want to see in a wonton wrapper, deep fried.
Oh, man.
Obviously, it has to be food related.
Twizzlers.
Twizzlers.
I guarantee you, I'm going to walk in at some point and he'll have all of the ideas laid out. So, Lexi, how do you feel about this?
Twizzlers is one for
pass.
Sure.
Pass. I can't think of anything right now.
Gosh, I don't even know.
Salami.
That'd be easy.
That's normal.
I just really want salami.
Oh, I don't really know.
Crickets.
Actually, that's probably more traditional. has probably been done, if we're being honest.
Traditional.
Sierra, you look like you're thinking hard over there.
I am.
she got her concentration.
$1 billion idea.
No, okay. Stop the games.
Okay, whey protein then.
I think that might...
I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm done. He said anything.
Well,
that's
there you
edible.
Go.
A Vanta Black CD.
Well, you have a couple challenges ahead of you, Jordan. Good luck.
Shout outs to Rob. We figured out that they're flexible.
What?
The what? CDs.
CDs are very flexible. You can fold them up into the shape of a taco. Which allows you to put them into things that where CDs wouldn't normally fit. Like, say, just a random thing off the top of my head. I don't know where I'm coming from this, but like a, you know, a protein container. Or like an oats container. You can fit a CD in there.
Okay.
And like a shaker bottle. You can fit them in there.
Oh, my God.
Totally random objects. No reason I'm saying this. Anyway.
Okay, then.
Probably get one inside a guitar.
Like, ooh. Like, ooh.
Oh, it's like you think you're never getting your pick out.
There you go. It's next level.
CD in there.
Maybe like a GameCube game, a mini CD.
All right, so we kind of already answered this when we were talking about what inspires us, because we also talked about influences and how our writing process goes. But it's also a little different because he asked what inspired. How did we come up with our sound? Like, what inspires our sound? And I guess you can kind of answer that more on, did someone decide that it was going to be a progressive rock band, or?
I think it's just the way the music kind of fell.
It kind of just progressed that way. Like, my original vision, my favorite band is The Fall of Troy. So I always wanted to do kind of like a three-piece, like, post-hardcore band. But it's just, before you know any musicians, you're kind of at the mercy of whoever you can find. When you're at that stage of writing music, when you're just starting a band, you know, you're not a part of the music scene. Your whole thing is just who plays music, who knows how to play an instrument, come in. You find them all and you grab them and you be in a band with them. And then that's when you start realizing, like, okay, this person doesn't work for this. You know, I can't use this person for that. And then, you know, you meet other people through them and you sort of expand on that. Mm. It really just is a big, you know, mesh up of all of our different influences. Like I mentioned earlier, that we have a list of all of our different influences. If you go in and you like look at those artists and then you listen to each person's part in each song, you'll definitely hear their influences come out. But we somehow still get it to meld together really well.
Yeah, I think it's just because there's so many angles, I think it makes it work. Yeah, I don't think this would function without all six of us.
No, there's just some sort of magic combination.
There's no like vision. Like, you know, you listen to a band's CD and it's very obvious what their like type of sound they're going for is. All their songs generally fit in those guidelines. And I mean, you can kind of say that for us for the first EP, but really the first EP was the very first five songs we had written.
Yeah.
In almost in order. And so we were just like, all right, there's our first five songs. Let's record them, get them out.
Yeah.
You know, just to get music out. Like, go record. But now that we're doing the second one, it's kind of like, you know, we can be a little more picky with our sound, but I mean, we don't really do that.
We don't really say, okay, this is what this song is going to sound like. We just we'll jump on board with anything that sounds good, no matter what it is stylistically.
Mm-hmm. I feel like any of us can really get behind pretty much any idea that comes to the table.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, everybody's brought something that somebody latches on to, mm-hmm. and they're like, all right, we got to do that.
Yeah, I mean, parts have been written off of bass parts. Yep. Lexi brought in a song. It was just her singing in the piano, and then we formed an entire song around that, drums, bass, guitar, violin,
which is now
all that.
The song Let's Dance.
Yeah, Let's Dance. That'll definitely be on the second CD. One of my favorites, for sure. One of the main reasons we bring a piano with us to gigs now.
If they don't keep breaking.
If they don't keep breaking. Well, is that our third time?
That was only our
third.
Well, the first one broke, and then the second time it was being weird.
Essentially, we really have really bad luck with keyboards at gigs.
Your Korg keyboards.
Korg keyboards.
So I was trying to look at more questions that were on my Facebook thing, but apparently I deleted the post by accident.
So, so all the comments that I had are Alrighty. Gone.
I guess we'll take this time to talk about the fact that we just launched our new online store.
Yes.
If you go and check out our Facebook page or our website
right now,
it's probably the latest post and definitely worth looking at. Some cool designs. You can get yourself a nice Frantic Endeavor coffee mug if you're looking for one.
Ethan, I saw you ordered one, so I'm really excited to see how that...
Awesome. Yeah. I'm really excited to see how that...
New purchase, Ethan Jackson has purchased pizza mug.
Yep, we got t-shirts, we got hoodies, we got mugs, and we're going to have a lot more stuff soon. Mm-hmm.
So much in the works. We're working on...
a lot of new artwork coming out.
Yep.
Like, we've had one t-shirt design for almost an entire year, but that is changing very, very quickly.
Yep.
All this is going to really lead up to... hopefully the next release musically. Also check out our YouTube channel. We have some funny videos there called Frantic Endeavors.
Yeah, we're going to get back on posting those. We haven't really had time to just get through them yet, but we've had some pretty good responses from that, so we're going to keep on going.
Yeah, it kind of gives you a different outlook or a different way to look into how we act as a group.
Yeah, it's just, like a behind the scenes.
Yeah, it's
behind the scenes. Yeah. Us being goofy, just having a good time.
Just doing whatever. It's also... it's definitely your only way to get a sneak peek at some of the
Lots of unreleased material. Unreleased materials.
Yeah, there's some demo stuff on there.
Mm-hmm. Instrumentals, you know, lots of cool little bits.
Yeah.
Little bits. What?
Little bits.
Yeah. Did we have any more questions from people?
Let me take a gander.
Take agenda at the phone.
Oh, I have an interesting question here. So it's actually a two-part question. We answered the first part to my buddy Seth. He asked who our influences are. We answered that, but then he said, "How did each of you find your instrument?" So how did you each find your instrument? Which is a really cool question.
I like that.
I'll take this because I'll start because I know exactly how this happened.
Go for it.
So earlier, Chris and I talked about how we played in the garage. And back then, I was a drummer, and our other friend was a drummer, and we used to take turns.
Lightning Lightfoot himself.
Lightning Lightfoot, the homie. I've been friends with him for almost 17 years, and that is a long fucking time. But yeah, taking turns on drums sucks to play the same three songs. So I looked around the room, and there was this thing called a bass, and it only had four strings, which was... extremely less intimidating than Chris's magical six-string instrument. And so I learned some root notes, and I did that for, like, I don't know, 4 years. just played root notes.
Same, and then, like, six songs.
Yeah, same stuff.
4 years.
And then Chris and I started, like, really getting into a groove again with each other, like, after some time. And we started writing. My senior year of high school, I joined a band that he was in, Voodoo Swift. It's cool. The homie band, Faith from Fable, their guitarist, Cody, was originally going to be the bass player in Voodoo Swift. He went to audition.
Oh, really?
Yep. And then I auditioned, and I knew two or three of the songs Chris had already brought to the band because I'd been playing with them before. So Cody went and got really good at guitar.
Was it Tom who got me into Voodoo Swift? I thought it was you.
No, it was Tom because worked with Josh at 99.
Yeah, he was like, oh, yeah, I remember because he was like, oh, yeah, my buddy at work plays guitar. We're starting a band. And I was like, oh, yeah, that's cool or whatever. He's like, yeah, I'm looking forward to it. And then, like, maybe a month later, he hit me up again. He's like, so, yeah, we need, like, a guitar player. And I was like, yes, I mean, yes, let's go.
For sure. Yeah, it was over my Christmas break. My senior year of high school, I joined Voodoo Swift. And, yeah, from there it progressed.
Voodoo Swift.
Really, really started to figure out who my influences were, figured out, like, what kind of direction I wanted to take my playing personally. Then I bought a 5-string bass years later as I joined Frantic Endeavor. You get 5 extra low notes with a standard 5-string. So I decided that wasn't cool, and I got I got it modded. So I have the high C string instead. That gives me 19 extra high notes. So I play a modded 5-string now. And I'm sure I'll creep my way back up to 6-string.
Yeah, we have a lot of extended range instruments in our band, yet we still retain a kind of rock, progressive rock sound. Because my main thing with that wanting a seven string was I didn't just want to kind of do chuggy metal like everyone else with a seven string guitar does. I really wanted to do, you know, something else. And, you know, I don't utilize the seventh string that often, but it does allow me to do some really big chords, notably in My Healing.
So that's how I became a bass player. Was I took turns playing drums, and that sucked. Yeah. So I started playing bass, and from there I progressed into what I do now. And somebody else want to tell you the story of how they became whatever
Mine's
they are?
Mine's really simple and really short.
Go for
My mom had a piano that she got when she was probably 12, 13, and her parents gave her that. And she had it in my childhood home growing up, and no one ever played it. It just kind of sat there. And I remember when I was seven,
most pianos.
I noticed it for the first time, apparently, when I was seven. I started playing on it, and I didn't know what the fuck I was doing, but I just kept playing. And then from there, I just kept playing. And that's how I decided to play piano. And since I was so used to piano, whenever I tried to learn guitar, I was like, no, this hurts my fingers way too much. I can't bend my fingers that way because I'm so used to having them face down on the keyboard, on the keys. And then that's when I got my keyboard when I was 10. And then I just stuck with it because it was a lot easier. So, yeah, mostly from being lazy. And then singing was just something I've always been doing. I have recordings of when I was like 4 and I was singing. So wow. That's always been a thing, I guess.
Awesome.
Cool.
Go all right. This way now.
That works. Okay. When I was like a young kid, like a toddler, 2 or 3, I was banging around on pots and pans in the kitchen. And my parents would, you know, help me set them up and give me sticks and I'd whack on them. And they got me, I guess, a toy drum kit when I was maybe 4. And they were like, huh, you can actually, you know, kind of goof around on this noodle. And then when I was 5, I believe, they got me my first real drum kit, and I'd asked me if I wanted to take lessons, and I was like, okay. So brought it down. We went down to Music Unlimited in Kingston, and originally they weren't going to accept me because I was too young, but I guess I could play okay. So they were like, oh, we can give him lessons. And
proved yourself.
21 years later, here I am still playing drums after many, many years of private lessons. Studied at Berklee College of Music for 3 years with, you know, music production was my main deal there. But yeah.
The thing with Berklee is you have to play an instrument. You have to audition with an instrument.
Yep. Yeah, that was one of the more terrifying processes in my life was auditioning for Berklee.
Yeah, you had a much more extensive practice with drums than I ever had with keyboard because the most practice I had was, well, formal lessons in a way was for a few months with one person, but then they moved away. And then after that, we just didn't bother to find another person. But because of him, I learned how to read chords. So yeah. That's really all I need.
Right. You can take it from there.
I can't read musical notes.
I definitely still can't read music. I've never taken a lesson.
That's another way. I'm just lazy. I'd rather just figure it out by ear or memory or somebody show me.
That's one thing I'm thankful for. My longtime drum teacher, Phil Neighbors, he taught me pitched malleted percussion, like xylophone, marimbas, vibes. And he got me started in my basis of music theory and taught me that for years, along with my drums, which has helped me more than I'm sure I even know. Yeah. But I can thank him pretty much for where I am as a musician today.
Yeah. Like, I know it's something I need to know, but I don't want to.
No, it can be crazy.
It's a lot.
Yeah, we don't really write in a way that requires you to have any, you know, annotation.
No.
But it could help, like Ethan said, like, he might use it subconsciously in ways that he wouldn't think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because he doesn't know.
It's a different way to visualize music when you imagine it on the score.
Yeah. Mm. It's Gwib's turn.
Well, I started playing violin when I was 9 years old. I picked it up through the school system in my city. When I was in third grade, the music teachers locally would come to our school for a day and be like, this is a violin. This is what it sounds like. Next year, you can start playing one. So I guess 8, 9-year-old me was just like, I want to do that. So I did.
We have very similar stories with our writing process and how we chose our instrument.
And I guess I liked it enough to stick with it 13, 14 years later. And along the way, I've always played through this whole school system. I took private lessons when I got to high school, and then I started branching out to different orchestras outside of my high school's orchestra. So at one point, I was in like 4, 5, or 6 orchestras at once, on top of picking up other instruments along the way. Like, I started singing. I played alto sax for a few years. I noodled around with a mandolin and piano. But one thing that's always been a constant for me was violin. So I consider that to be my quote unquote main instrument.
And what's your mean?
Yeah, I guess that's my story.
Cool.
It's so funny that you mentioned that they brought the violin to your school and like they showed everyone like what it was and what it did. Did they bring other instruments too?
Oh yeah.
Because we had the same thing at our school. They brought in all the different instruments. They were like, this is a trumpet. And then the guy would play the trumpet. And then they'd have like a saxophone. And they'd be like, this is a saxophone. And they would play and show all the instruments. And then, you know, your parents would have the choice to enroll you into the school system. You learn that instrument. You know, you rent one out for X amount of dollars or whatever. And then I think it was lease to buy, because at the end we ended up, I got to own it. But I skipped a part. But I mean, I picked up the saxophone through that kind of thing. And so I've actually always played the saxophone first. I think it was 4th grade. We had lessons through the school and it was alto saxophone. And I mean, did that, did the jazz band. I brought it to high school. I did the band, I did the jazz band, you know, all that good stuff. But I mean, I always kind of just, it was always something I kind of did. It was nothing, it wasn't something I like loved. I didn't have like a passion for the saxophone. I didn't have like artists that I would listen to and want to emulate. I was kind of lost in that world. It was kind of unfamiliar to me. I would just mostly learn the music that those, you know, whoever our conductor was would show us and be like, all right, you're going to learn this. And I'd be like, all right, great. And I would do it. And, you know, I guess I'm pretty good at that. So that's the whole reason I can read music. Was through that, you know, they teach you one note at a time, every single note, and you learn the one note. And your very first lesson, they go in, they say, here's a G. You hold down your 3 fingers, and that's a G. Come back next week, like, practice that all week.
Stay tuned.
And then the next week, they're like, okay, this is A. And then you have 2 notes. And then, you know, then they'll start showing you more at once. But in the very beginning, it's so basic like that. Here's G, here's A. You know, go from there.
Wow.
But so, I mean, I started music early, but I didn't pick up the guitar until 10th grade. And everyone's guitar story is, I was 2 years old. I was in the womb playing guitar.
That's Wesley's story, actually. I asked Wes that the other day. Yeah. And I was like, when did you even start playing guitar? He was like, I don't know. I was like 4.
That's every guitarist. Yeah. I always hated that because I felt like I was at such a disadvantage. Like, oh, these kids have already been playing for years and they're all already really good. And I'm just picking it up now and I can't do anything on it. And I think that's what pushed me to really be a better player a lot quicker, because I wanted to, you know, I had to play catch up, really. And I mean,
see, I'm the opposite. I look at people who are better than me and I'm like, well, they're already better than me, so I might as well just stay here.
I kind of get stuck in between both. I'm like, oh, wow, Dan, I got to be like Dan Smith.
Okay, yeah, to a certain point when they're like incredible, I'm like, all right, tap out. Like, that's impossible.
I aspire to be as talented and technically clean as he is. And then like the other half of me is like, yeah, fucking right, buddy.
Yeah, only with keyboard, though. When it comes to vocals, I am definitely more competitive and I want to be a lot better.
Mm-hmm.
And same with writing lyrics. When it comes to piano, it's just like, whatever. I can do enough on it.
Yeah, I know. I mean,
it gets me by.
Even when you like started playing with us, we like would suggest adding some keyboard or suggest some other parts. And you'd be like, yeah, whatever, you know, like press it off. And it took until, you know, some of the brand new songs to even get any keyboard parts in.
I actually wrote down a lot of chords. I had chords for every single song that was on the EP. I just never incorporated it. Hmm. But I have the paper still where it has the chords that I planned for it.
If we do any of the re-records, maybe we can toy around with those.
Good.
But, I mean, anyway, the guitar fit more into the types of music I was listening to. I mean, I remember the pretty much the very first time I was absolutely blown away by the guitar was the band Dragon Force. And this is before like Guitar Hero, when that was like a big thing. Like I was listening, I had all three of their CDs.
You were an actual fan.
I was a real fan. I had the t-shirts. And
not just a Guitar Hero fan.
Not a Guitar Hero fan. No.
I was like, I had the first CD.
Yeah, Valley of the Damned. It's a great CD. And then before that, they were called Dragonheart.
Oh, yeah.
And then they changed their name. Love this band. Anyway, I'd listen to those guitar solos and just be absolutely blown away just from what I was hearing. Like, my brain couldn't even process what I was hearing. The notes were so fast. It was just like all the harmonies and the things they do is insane. And I was just like, wow, I want to do that. And.
Well, you wrote a pretty freaking sick guitar solo for one of our new songs.
Yeah. Spoiler.
First frantic solo.
Spoiler alert. Sounds so good.
Spoiler alert.
It will be coming.
Thank you. It took a couple different attempts to finally get something that I liked with that song. Yeah. I mean, Dragon Force, The Fall of Troy, obviously. Same thing. It's all technical guitars that just sound otherworldly. It doesn't sound like any other guitars. Like, you listen to any, you know, all the bands on the radio before you start experimenting with all these like
all those
underground
bands,
all these like hardcore bands, you know, none of that's mainstream. You have to discover all that yourself online. At least that, I mean, that's what happened with us. It was like MySpace. It was the first time I ever listened to metal. It was In Flames.
Oh wow.
I had to like prepare myself for what I was about to hear. And then yeah, took lessons at the Carver School of Music. Shout outs to Doug. Fabulous Thunderbirds. It's like his best thing. And yeah, we got a free advertisement in the mail. It was a little flyer. I was like, you can get one free guitar lesson. My mom's like, oh, do you want to do this? I was like, yes, because they just got me a guitar for Christmas, so it just kind of worked out that way.
Perfect.
And so I started going over there, and their teaching method was so cool, because in your very first lesson, you go in there, they give you a guitar, they teach you three chords. For me, it was Back in Black. It was AC/DC. It was either Back in Black or Highway to Hell. And they teach you the first three chords. And then they bring you out of the practice room and they put you up on the stage. And they call in another guy on drums. And then they have you playing the song on stage. Day one. Like, they're like, all right, perform it.
That's pretty cool.
And they shove you right into it. And then once you get that little taste, that's all you need. And you just, you go from there. Really great system. Definitely inspired me.
So what other experience, like music experience, have we all had after we decided our instrument? Shows,
noteworthy events?
Like, I'll start it off by saying, because a few of you were getting into it, you already mentioned Berklee and different things like that. So since we already touched on that subject, I think that would be a good way to kind of wrap this up. So my music experience basically revolves around church, because I live down south and my whole family's religious. So we always went to church. And so I was there. I grew up in church. So I sang in like the worship band, and I got to the point where I was like leading worship and I was leading everybody singing, and I was the main person singing and playing piano. And then there was a couple plays that I was in, like musicals. And then, that CD that I mentioned that I was featured in, my sister was also featured in it too, for this band called Camouflage that nobody knows about. And they made us raise all this money. And so we were like asking our friends and family to pitch in so we could do this recording. And we went to their studio. It was like their own home studio. And
Does this exist anywhere? Cool.
Probably.
I don't know if they're still around. They're really nice people, so I know they intended well, but we never got the copy of the CD. And I was really sad.
Wow. They took their money and they...
And they made their CD, and then that was it. And I can say this without getting in trouble, because, like, they did me wrong, and I was 12 anyway, so it was years ago. So that happened. So basically for me, like, a lot of church things, events, festivals, musicals, and then I got to the point where I started doing open mics, and then band.
I think for me, the only other like musical, like, I don't know, like teachings are like the biggest asset to me musically, I'd have to say, was my high school vocal instructor, because she's really cool and she got me as a person. And I used to skip study my junior year and go help her teach general music to the middle school kids because Carver High School and the middle school are the same building. It's a very small town.
It's the Carver Middle High School.
Yeah, that's what it is now.
Connected in the center. It's the weirdest thing I've ever seen.
So I used to skip studying my junior year, and then senior year, you have the option of doing an internship. So I was her intern, and we taught 6th and 8th grade general music. And for me, it was like, it felt like it was easy to comprehend. Like, understanding, like, teaching 6th graders, like, you know, whole notes, quarter notes, like, what everything stands for, like, you think that's easy, but then, like, as you explain, like, yeah, as soon as you explain it, and you're the one explaining it, you start to understand more and more, like, from what you've played or, like, what you've heard. Like, you understand what's happening now.
Teaching something is the best way to fully understand something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I 100% back that statement.
Definitely.
And she's helped me a lot. She was definitely probably my biggest asset musically. Because she gave me a lot of cool textbooks and some cool stuff to read just on music theory and helped me get my foundation. And then this band has obviously been one of my biggest learning curves.
For sure.
I mean, I've been playing with Chris forever. He's been extremely helpful. He taught me how to read guitar tabs and tabs.
Hey, that's have a been big thing. A
lifesaver for me. They helped me learn a ton of stuff.
Tabs are kind of a blessing and a curse for guitarists, right? Because you can learn how to play the tabs and you can pretty much learn any song. I mean, you go on Ultimate Guitar and pretty much every song is on there. But, you know, you put the musical score in front of you with all the actual notes and note values on it, and it's, you have no idea what you're looking at.
But yeah, I'd say the only other thing I have was that. I mean, I don't think I did anything else in my life musically other than playing with Chris and my high school stuff. I mean, I was in a musical in high school, which was cool. That was a different way to look at music, too, because you have to act on top of the music. So you have to, like, really understand where things are, which is cool. But other than that, I'm pretty much self-taught on the rest of my instruments.
Very nice. Yeah, that was part of my school since I was homeschooled. After I got all my book work done, my mom would say, okay, now go play piano, go work on music for 2 hours every day. So that was another big part in helping me learn. But joining this band has definitely been the most challenging. And it's good because I needed to be challenged because I was getting too complacent with my music.
Definitely pushes you to be a better musician when you're working with other musicians.
Yeah, one thing I think that I'm pretty sure most of us has done during the, at least my tenure with this band, we've all written parts that we can't quite play yet.
I'm definitely super guilty of that.
Yeah. Which is good. I mean, you could do nothing better than just
challenge yourself.
Challenge yourself. Say, okay, I can't play this yet, but I know I'll be able to.
Yeah, I'm starting to delve into the realm of tapping. And I can do some of the, like, single note tapping or whatever, but now I'm starting to, like, tap some chords on the bass, which is hard anyways, but doing it cleanly is a skill that you have to master, and that takes time.
Cool.
I was going to say something, but I already forgot. Really, the biggest thing that distracted me was cheese moving around the microphone.
Ooh, shiny.
What are you saying? We learned tapping. What was he saying before that?
What was the question?
Writing challenging parts. Honestly, one of the best things...
parts that you can't quite play yet.
Yeah. Okay. Real quick to add 2 seconds. One of the biggest assets for me, especially going back to something I said probably 45 minutes ago at this point in the recording, when I took time off from Frantic Endeavor to play acoustically, I put myself in a position where I was playing a bass that I was not great at bass yet, but the guitarist I was playing with was phenomenal. Playing with people that are better than you will only make you better. Yep. Just, you got to stay determined and strive to play along with them. Even if it's just root notes for a little bit, you'll start to fall into, like, their kind of, like, feel for music. And that has helped me tremendously. That's why I play with as many people as I can.
That's a good approach.
You had your finger on your nose. You're trying to remember.
Yo, dog, you did the trick.
Writing parts that are better.
Writing parts that you can't play yet.
Writing parts you can't play yet.
It's just gone. Okay. Well, I remember what, trick, one the beer? Trick, the trick you're a pussy.
It's not, it's not about the beer. Ducks.
Okay, so I guess we'll take that time to end it.
Yeah.
We appreciate if anybody's still listening to this. I don't know why you are, but, you know.
I love you.
Thank you.
Make sure you check out our merch. Check out our website, Facebook, Instagram, yep, Snapchat.
We got links there to our brand new merch store all over our Facebook page. Well, we already got a few new designs up, like we said. We're going to have a whole bunch more, so go, please, buy our stuff. Please, we beg of you.
Yeah, we need that. We have a bunch
also,
of
also, if you're an artist, hit us up.
Yes.
Yeah, hit us up. We're really friendly, and we'll play a show with you, probably.
And even collaborating, if you... Yeah. We want to incorporate as many types of music into our band as possible, so mm-hmm. no matter what it is, it could be rap, it could be rock, it could be pop, indie, where we're down.
Yeah, we'll do pretty much anything.
Yeah. And also just remember we're on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat, Facebook.
Spotify.
You can email us at YouTube. franticendeavor@gmail.
franticendeavor.com.
Club Penguin.
R.I.P.
Bandcamp, Big Cartel, Teespring. Anything else?
I don't know if we mentioned our EP is available to buy on iTunes and
Spotify.
It's on Spotify.
I mean, it's
Apple Music.
You can stream
Apple
it.
Apple Music. Amazon.
Yeah,
shut up. Literally everywhere that music is sold.
Yeah.
Google Play.
All right. So thank you guys for listening. If you like this, let us know. We'll probably try another one of these in the future. So if you have any more questions,
still let us know.
Or even topic ideas, just let us know.
Topic ideas, questions, we'll do our best to get into them. Because clearly we can talk. So
ask us the things.
So thanks everybody for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
Bye.
Bye. Okay, bye.